Hi, I'm Everton Ladies Alex Greenwood and you're listening to the Women's Football Podcast.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Welcome to the third episode of the Women's Football Podcast. As always, I am Kieran, but unfortunately, people, I am missing my co-host. Yes, Hamish is not here. He's decided to vacate the building and has not come back. Now, in all seriousness, Hamish has just tied the knot to his beautiful bride, Joanna, so I'm afraid that he has been slightly out of the loop of late in the women's football world and will not be joining us for this episode of this podcast. However, I am joined by a former Matilda international, 68 caps for Australia. I am indeed joined by Alicia Ferguson. Hello, Alicia.
Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. No problem at all. It's really great to have you. And I think you are going to be a more than worthy stand-in for our normal co-host. So plenty to get through for the Women's Football Podcast this month. We will be having a look at the Champions League final, which of course was won by Wolfsburg at Stamford Bridge.
We're also going to talk about the FIFA Executive Committee elections, their impact on women's football, and we had a chat to Moya Dodd, who's the Australian representative in those elections.
We did indeed, and she certainly had some interesting things to say. We'll obviously have our usual domestic roundup. We'll be looking at the FA Women's Super League and who is leading the way at the moment. And the FA Women's Premier League was also decided, so we'll be looking at who came out on top in that.
Then we'll get into the European roundup, where Lyon and Wolfsburg won their respective leagues. Torresso set the pace in Sweden. Then we're going to have a chat about the NWSL, where we chat to Carly Lloyd. And also, I was lucky enough to catch up with Mia Hamm when she was over here for the Women's Champions League final.
Fantastic. So rather than hanging about, let's get on with it.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so our first topic this month is, of course, the Women's Champions League final that took place at Stamford Bridge last week. Alicia, you were there with a few special guests. What did you make of the game?
I thought it was an interesting game. I think it was quite predictable. We all knew that Wolfsburg were probably going to set out their stall and try and frustrate Lyon, and I think that's exactly what they did. They had obviously a suspension with Viola Odebrecht, who really runs their midfield, so they had to compensate for that. But I think Wolfsburg did it really well. They were always going to sit back on the edge of the 18-yard box and try and hit Lyon on the counter-attack.
Now, there were a few talking points, weren't they? Obviously, we should mention that Wolfsburg did win the game 1-0. Martina Müller with a penalty in the second half. Some controversial substitutions made by the Lyon coach. Megan Rapinoe taken off at half-time. Camille Avelli taken off midway through the second half. What do you think his thinking was behind that?
It was an interesting one, I think, particularly with Pinoe, because I didn't personally think that she was having a particularly bad game. The whole Lyon team seemed like they were still in second gear. They really hadn't gotten out of their warm-up mode almost. But, you know, maybe it was just that tactical. Maybe he saw that he needed a bit more of a spark in the second half. I would have liked to have seen him give Pino a bit more time in the second half to see if she could affect the game, because really, Lyon was struggling in those wide areas. They just weren't getting any penetration in behind Wolfsburg down in those wide areas. They were constantly trying to play through the middle, and against a defence that's set up pretty much in a block of four and four in front of them, they were always going to find that difficult.
Mm. I think it was interesting, wasn't it? I think, you know, you looked at players like Lotte Schelin. She was very isolated up front. I was surprised that he waited so long to bring Eugenie Lassomme on, who'd scored five goals in the league the previous week in a 9-0 win for Lyon. I mean, what do you think it was? I mean, you know, 2 years unbeaten in the Champions League. It's their first defeat, I think, in 118 games. Do you think it was just a case of maybe nerves, or do you think they felt the pressure, or do you think that it was just a case that Wolfsburg did a professional job and that's why they came out on top?
I think you might be right with the last point about Wolfsburg. You need to give them credit. We've seen it in all types of games. You know, Chelsea in the men's Champions League final did exactly the same thing. They knew they weren't going to have as much possession. They executed a really successful game plan to frustrate the opponent, and Wolfsburg did that. And it's not pretty to watch, and as a player, it's not a great way to play. No footballer wants to go out and think, right, we're just going to sit here and frustrate the opposition. But that's where you have to be smart about it. What's going to get you the result at the end of the day? And they came out trumps. Quite lucky to get a penalty. Probably was a bit soft on the referee's part, but they executed their game plan perfectly.
I think obviously people were surprised that Wolfsburg came out on top, but I don't think we should underestimate them. I think it was mentioned that they had a number of German internationals in there. They had players who've won the Champions League with Duisburg and Turbine Potsdam and Frankfurt. So while we were expecting Lyon to win and while they were the favourites, maybe we shouldn't be so surprised that Wolfsburg came out on top.
No, and to be honest, I wasn't surprised. After watching the first 20 minutes where I thought it was a normal final where both teams sit back, just trying to see what happens. No one really wants to, expose themselves. But then what Wolfsburg did was just continued on with that. And you need to give them credit. The way they did defend, they stayed so compact. They were right on top of the Lyon players' touch every single time. The Lyon players didn't have as much time on the ball as I think they have been used to, possibly in their league and in previous games.
It could be that, of course, that they haven't been as tested as Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg obviously played in a German Cup final the week before, which we will mention a little bit later on. But Lyon have coasted through their league campaign. And again, we will talk about that shortly. But, we have to congratulate Wolfsburg. And I think at the end of the day, while many or some might not agree with the tactics that they deployed, it was certainly effective, and they're the ones that were lifting the trophy at the end of the game.
And I think you have to appreciate that still in football, in the modern day era, teams are going to employ those tactics to get a result. And as I said, it's not necessarily something that they love doing, but this is a final on your hands, and it really is win at all costs. And as you say, they were the ones lifting the trophy at the end of the day.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations to Wolfsburg. Let's move on to our second topic. On the 30th and 31st of May, so it will be around the time that you're downloading this podcast, there is a FIFA Congress taking place in Mauritius, and during that, there will be an election for the first female member of the FIFA Executive Committee. There are four candidates that are potentially in line to sit on that committee. Alicia, you're a female footballer yourself. What impact do you think this will have on women's football, having a female member on this particular executive committee?
I guess it just improves the diversity of the committee. There's someone with a vested interest in the women's side of the game and someone that's really going to push for the cause, and sometimes that doesn't always happen. And just knowing Moya from back in Australia, she's such a great advocate for the game and also quite inspiring to hear her journey and the way she's come along. And I think it's only going to be a benefit, whether it's her or another candidate, just to have that female perspective on that committee.
Absolutely. Well, I think, we could talk about the executive committee all day, but actually I think it would probably be better if we heard from one of the candidates. I did manage to have a quick conversation with Moya Dodd, the Australian candidate, recently, and here's what she had to say. Moya, thanks very much for joining us on the Women's Football Podcast. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about the sort of things that you and your fellow candidates have had to do over the last few months since being nominated as a candidate?
Each of us have been nominated by our confederation. So in my case, Australia is part of the Asian Football Confederation, and the others have come from North America, Africa and Oceania, respectively.
Okay, so you're up against Lydia Nasekara, Sonia Bienaim and Paula Kearns. What are the sort of things that you've had to be doing in the last few months to try and get your name out there and really sort of promote yourselves?
Well, I've been trying to speak with as many people as possible. I've travelled around, given a few speeches here and there, spoken to a lot of media. I think that's part of the democratic process, that if you're going to offer yourself for a position like this on a world governing body, that people should know a little bit about what you stand for and what you're about, what your background is and who you are. So it's actually been a great way of connecting with a lot of people in the football world, both male and female.
Now, this will be the 25th member of the committee, but the first female. What's the significance, not just on football, but more specifically for women's football?
I think it's a hugely significant moment in history, actually. I mean, it's It's 25 years this year since FIFA first organised a world tournament for women, which was in June 1988. Actually, it was the 1st of June that it began. So it's literally 25 years almost to the day since FIFA first organised a world tournament. And, you know, I was lucky enough to play in that tournament. And when I think back over the last quarter of a century, there's been a phenomenal rise in the game. I mean, the levels of the standards of play, the levels of professionalism, the sheer growth in the game, in participation numbers, and in the number of countries who are playing. It's been an amazing trajectory, and not surprising, of course, because the game was held back and excluded for so long that when you finally allow girls and women to play, of course, there's going to be a huge take up. But at the same time, you know, we all know that there's a long way to go, and I think, you know, to bring a woman into the FIFA Exco, to the top table where the debates are being held and decisions are being made about major competitions, about resourcing, about development. I think it's, I'd be very hopeful that whoever's elected can really make a difference for the game globally.
Mm. Now, football is one of the most participated sports for girls in the UK, but I think I read somewhere that there's 29 million females playing football globally. How much pressure is there on the person who's elected to try and cater for all of those girls?
Well, actually, there's more than that now. I think that was at the last big count, and the next one there'll be even more, I'm sure. Look, I think most of those, I don't know about pressure. I think it's a bit like a big game, whether you're playing a cup final or a season opener. You know, the job is the same. You go out and focus on the things that you need to do well and prioritise the things that you can make a difference to. And, you know, as they say, don't worry about what you can't control, worry about what you can control. So it's the same off the field as well. And I think it's just a matter of doing what you can every day to make the game better.
Now, you mentioned that you played in the first sort of FIFA-recognised tournament back in 1988. We're obviously in 2013, now 25 years on. Whoever is elected come the end of this week, what do you think the significance is in terms of the next 25 years, and where do you think the women's game realistically can go?
Look, I'm very, very optimistic about the women's game. You know, I know there are days when we all think, oh my God, you know, it shouldn't be this hard. And it shouldn't be this hard. But the reality is we've come a very, very long way in a few decades. When you compare it with the progress that was able to be made in the decades before that. I mean, of course, our game was banned in many parts of the world for much of the last century. And it still is not catered for in many parts of the world. But, you know, I think the big difference now is that at the elite level, it truly is a magnificent game to watch. I mean, if you watch the last FIFA World Cup finals, if you watch the Olympics, then you're in no doubt that this is a fantastic game to watch. It's a great product. And that means that, you know, you have very visible heroes now on the global stage. You have superb athletes who are fantastic role models and who are able to step up and inspire a whole generation. The challenge is to give them the competitions, the platforms to play in. And the international competitions, obviously, you've got Olympics, you've got World Cups. I think the next big challenge is the national leagues. I know the WSL here is the FA, Kelly Simmons and others have done a great job of getting that going. In Australia, we have the W League. In the US, there's a new league. There are great leagues in Germany and Sweden and elsewhere. I think the challenge is to create more professional environments at the club and national league level so that our top players can be professionals day in, day out, week in, week out. And then you'll really see, you know, if you think it's good now, you know, wait till players can give up their day jobs and be full-time professionals.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Follow the podcast on Twitter
@WFPod.
So that was Moya Dodd talking about the FIFA Executive Committee elections. We, of course, wish her well, along with the other three candidates. Let's bring things closer to home. Let's have a look at the domestic competition here in England, starting with the Women's Super League. And certainly a few surprises early on, Alicia.
It's been an interesting start, yeah. I think everyone's surprised to see Arsenal. They've only played two games, but on 1 point and second bottom place on the table, that's not usually a position that they're used to. But I think that's just testament to how strong this league is getting year after year.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I went to the Emirates Stadium for their opening game against Liverpool, and it was just absolutely amazing what I was seeing on the pitch, genuinely. I mean, I think the result was actually fair for Liverpool. They did play very well. They did open Arsenal up. I think Arsenal will admit that they were well below par on the day. But I think it was interesting to see the reaction that came as a result of that. You did seem to have a few people almost writing Arsenal off, which you can't do this early, can you, surely?
Oh no, I was thinking the same thing. Everyone was being quite, well, not everyone. There were some people being quite harsh about Arsenal's performances and their results, but, you know, they were still creating chances in that game. Liverpool, on another day, they did play well and they did deserve the win. But Arsenal, you know, they're not perfect and they'd be the first to admit that. I think what's important is how they bounce back after that. And they have done that, and I think that just shows what a champion team they are.
Absolutely. But, obviously, with that result for Liverpool and a few other good results for the ladies in red, are they starting to answer some of the questions that were asked at the beginning of the season? There were a lot of questions with so many new players coming in. Would they be able to gel? But they seem to have done okay early on, don't they?
They have, and I think that's a testament to what a full-time program can provide to a team. They haven't come in and just been training two nights a week as a team. Liverpool have invested in the women's team, and you know, you can't put a price on being able to train day in, day out with a group of players. You improve so much quicker than you ever would, and I think that's showing with Liverpool.
And one of the other surprise teams is, of course, Bristol Academy. They, at the time of recording, lead the league table. What's impressed you about them?
I think the signing of the other Spanish girl, Natalia, has been a big, big difference for Bristol. But also, I do think they've just been progressively building up and developing their players. They had a big loss in Jess Fishlock last season, just running that midfield. But really, their academy system, driving into their first team, I think will continue to grow and build. And we'll see Bristol just keep creeping up every single year with their development.
We've mentioned Arsenal and Bristol. The two teams did face each other in the recent FA Women's Cup final, which Arsenal came out on top 3-0. Do you think that was sort of brought the Bristol side back crashing down to earth, or was it a case of, you know, one of just wasn't their day and Arsenal really turned on the form?
I think you could it highlighted that there is still a difference between Arsenal at the top tier and Bristol, and they are still a young developing side. I think Bristol massively missed Laura Del Rio. It was a shame that she picked up that hamstring injury and could only play a bit part, because really their attacking options were limited compared to what they've been used to at the start of the season.
Well, the game of course finished 3-0 with Steph Houghton, Jordan Nobbs and Ellen White on the score sheet. I think one of the stories that came out of that game, and we would like to wish her well, was Lucy Staniforth's injury. It looked like she went off with quite a nasty knee injury, and I know that she was due to have a scan at some point this week. So, Lucy, if you're listening, we wish you all the best. But let's move on. We mentioned at the start that the FA Premier League has finally been decided, and it was, as predicted in the last podcast, it was Sunderland that came out on top. It was Watford Ladies who finished as runners-up and Leeds United Ladies who finished third. And as I openly admitted in one of our previous podcasts, I am a Watford fan. I am a Watford Ladies fan. I am delighted for the club. Congratulations to Sunderland and to Leeds for the positions that they finished. And I'm sure that everyone will look forward to what's going on next season.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so that was all things domestic football in the UK. Now, we know we have a few of you following us from around Europe, so let's go to our European roundup, and we will start in France, where Lyon have won the league as expected, not only winning it, winning all of their domestic league fixtures, scoring 132 goals and conceding just 5. Alicia, sounds like it was pretty difficult for them.
Yeah, tough season. Tough season for Lyon. Yeah, I mean, congratulations to Lyon. It's thoroughly deserved. And when you look at the quality within that team, and again, the full-time professional setup that Lyon are investing into their women's side of it, it's not surprising that they're just running away with the league. The question would be, how long can, you know, France sustain that and continue developing as a nation? That would be my only question. When you're only got two or three teams competing for the league every single year, how are those players going to continue to progress?
And I think we mentioned it, didn't we, in the Champions League final, that maybe because Lyon have almost coasted throughout their domestic campaign, that, you know, maybe when they came up against a strong opposition in Wolfsburg, that, you know, maybe it just was too much for them. But, you know, credit to them and credit to the players that have represented them throughout the campaign. But obviously, they will be in the Champions League next year as a result of their league win, and they will be joined by Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, great to see PSG in there, another massive team. I'm sure all those other football fans around the world might be slightly disappointed that David Beckham isn't playing there anymore. He might have been able to get along to a few of the Champions League games.
Well, who needs David Beckham in Paris when you've got Tobin Heath? I know she's gone back now, but let's hope that she returns to Paris, because I'm pretty certain she would have been a popular player there. But that's France, and obviously congratulations to Lyon. Let's move on to Germany, where another of the teams we've already mentioned, Wolfsburg, have not only won the Champions League, they have also completed their first domestic double.
Yeah, it's fantastic for Wolfsburg. I caught up with Beck Smith, the Kiwi international, last week before the Champions League final, and it was nice having a chat to Beck. She's been at Wolfsburg for 8 seasons, and pretty much since they've come from the bottom of the table and now to the top of the table, and just to hear how proud she is, and again, about the investment in that club with the backing of the men's club as well, and really turning it into a professional outfit, it's fantastic what they've been able to do.
Well, they certainly didn't run away with it like Lyon did. I know that it was very close between themselves, Turbine Potsdam and Frankfurt, I think, pushed them all the way as well, but It was a league title for Wolfsburg, but it was also a German Cup. They beat Turbine Potsdam 3-2 in the final. And I don't know if you saw it, Alicia, but it was an absolutely cracking game. Absolutely cracking.
No, I didn't see it. But, you know, I think that's a testament to the strength of the German league. We've seen a German team in the Women's Champions League final for, what, the last 5 years, 5 or 6 years? And they're just a constant presence on the world stage, the international stage at World Cups, and in the Champions League. So they're obviously doing something right over there.
Yeah, Wolfsburg looking very strong at the moment. Well, let's finish the Euro roundup in Sweden. As you mentioned in our intro, it's Tyresö leading the way.
They are, and of course they've got that famous name pretty much everyone around the world knows is Marta. Kristen Press also, the US international, playing for them, and I just saw some highlights of their last game against Malmo, and it came down to the wire. Malmo missing a penalty, and then Tyresö coming out with the 1-0 win, so congratulations to them.
Yeah, looking good, Tyresö. And obviously, we are a UK-based podcast, and we make no secret of the fact that we do follow our players in Europe. And it was good to see that Jodie Taylor is certainly banging in the goals for Copperberg Gothenburg at the moment, and joined alongside Anita Asante. And just before we finish the Euro roundup, we did mention that we've got a few other English players based out abroad. Ashley Hinks is playing for FH out in Iceland, and Ashley actually scored a couple of goals early on. This Iceland season has just started. Danielle Hill is based out in Norway. I don't think Danielle has made too many appearances as yet, but I'm sure that her time will come. So that's where we are in our European roundup, and we will now move on to our next topic after this.
Women's Football Podcast.
Get involved via Facebook.
Facebook.com/WFpod.
So now we move on to the segment that we like to title the Tactics Board. And this is your opportunity to respond to a subject that is making the news that we have put out there through our social media channels on Twitter and Facebook. And this month we asked you, if you were elected onto the FIFA Executive Committee, what would be your first goal for women's football? Now, Alicia, we had some good responses, so take it away and tell us what they were.
No worries. Well, we had David Fox, who said, fix the pipeline of talent. More girls need to get involved at grassroots level from an earlier age. From Leanne, Leanne said, my first goal would be to push for more coverage, be it from newspapers to TV. Funding is still a major issue. from Cass Gabe. Also, acknowledging a female Ballon d'Or winner, not just a Women's World Player of the Year award, and expansion on youth academies. And finally, we had Adam Barlow, who said, beef up the program for female coaches and managers, which is an interesting one, Kieran.
I think you agree with that one, don't you? That's the one you felt most strongly about when we were looking through them.
I do agree with it. I think there's not a clear pathway into coaching for a lot of females, and you do see so many players with experience don't ever make that transition into coaching like they do in the men's game. I think there's definitely access to those programs, but they do need a little bit more support because there's not as many paid positions as there are in the men's game.
Okay, so let me ask you the question. If you were voted onto the FIFA exec committee, what would be your first target for women's football?
My first target, and this came to me just after I had a chat with Arsenal and England international Rachel Yankee today, and Rachel does such a tremendous amount of work with a football club that she pretty much founded herself and work in schools coaching young kids. And she said to me, her philosophy is that football is for everyone. And that hit home with me because I do think in a lot of countries around the world, there's still such a big gap between it being men's or boys playing football and women. And so a lot of girls who possibly want to play football don't have the access to either a team or facilities or even just the support network of family, friends or associations to actually go out and have a kick.
Well, I can't disagree with that. I think if I was to be on the committee, although it probably doesn't apply to me as much because obviously we were asking the first female initially, I think it would be good to see female football on similar sort of pitches and stadia to that of men. Now, I'm not saying that we want to see huge empty stadiums because I think that we all agree that women's football is still developing, and I think that when you look at the attendances, there's still, you know, we'd admit there's still quite some way to go. I think the Women's Champions League had about 20,000 people there in a 40,000-seat stadium. The FA Women's Cup final at Doncaster had less than 5,000, which I'm sure, you know, some will be disappointed with, but I know that there were a lot of people. I think it was about 950,000 people watched it on BBC. So, I mean, that's a good audience, and I think if that can continue to grow, then that's positive. But I'd really like to see the girls get an opportunity to play on pitches like the men do. You know, as I said, I've been to the Emirates this season to watch Arsenal. I went to Anfield to watch Liverpool v Arsenal in the FA Cup. And, you know, when the girls have got the opportunity to play on these pitches, the football is so good. You know, it is so good. And you know, I really do think if they had the opportunity to do that week in, week out, the quality of women's football really would increase. So that's what I'd do, but I'm not female, so I'm not going to be getting on the committee anytime soon. But yeah, so that's our tactics board. Thanks very much to everyone that tweeted us and Facebooked us. And of course, we will bring you another tactics board topic for next month in due course.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
So it's now time to move on to our second interview of the podcast, and I think we were both delighted when this player accepted our request to come on the pod. She's just returned from a serious injury for her team, the Western New York Flash. She was the hero of the gold medal match at the London 2012 Olympics. She is the only player to have scored the winning goal in two Olympic finals. Yes, people, it is indeed the US Women's National Team midfielder, Carly Lloyd. Carly, thanks very much for joining us on the third episode of the Women's Football Podcast. Let's start off by telling our listeners how you are at the moment. You've obviously suffered a broken bone in your shoulder. How frustrating is it for a professional athlete like yourself, you know, to sit there and watch your teammates and not being able to have any influence?
It's tough. It's one of those things where, you know, I think the older I get, the wiser I'm getting, just as far as being patient. And, you know, you really need to listen to your body, and you can't really rush things, because at the end of the day, you know, if you rush things, you could hurt yourself in the long run. So for me, you know, when I found out the news, I knew that there wasn't, you know, there was something not right in Portugal when I hurt my shoulder, and I was preparing for the worst. I was preparing for some sort of surgery or something. But at the end of the day, you know, when they told me I would be out 6 to 8 weeks, I took a, you know, breath for a moment and realized that, okay, you know, that's not terrible, but it's awful, also pretty difficult as well, because, you know, I'd be missing the beginning of the NWSL. Wanting to get up with my team, missing a couple national team games in Germany and Holland. Mm. So it's been tough, and watching the games on TV, you know, makes it a lot harder for me to sit there and watch. But at the end of the day, I'm, you know, refreshed, I'm rejuvenated. I think that I still have a lot to prove, and I have to go out there and I have to fight and I have to work as hard as I can. And I'm willing to do that, and I'm looking forward to it.
It seems crazy to hear someone with over 150 caps for their country saying that they have something to prove. You've been in the women's national team set up for quite some time, about, well, it's probably just under 10 years, about 8 years. Have you noticed any differences in that time, how the team has developed from the time that you made your international debut to where you are now?
I think we've made huge strides. When I first got onto the national team in 2005, I had some adjusting to do. The coach that was there at the time, Greg Ryan, his style of play was kind of more defensive-minded, kind of liked to play a bit more direct. And unfortunately for me, I had to kind of adapt my game. I had to become, you know, mentally tougher, stronger defending-wise. And, you know, didn't see a ton of the ball in the midfield, but had to just be ready for it when I went up to the forwards and get myself kind of close to goal. So that was definitely an adjustment. I'd say when Pia took over, she had a different philosophy, and that was to kind of try to get us to play more soccer, play through the midfield, play out of the back instead of the goalkeeper, you know, punting it forward, rolling it out, using the outside backs, using the center backs, and kind of moving the ball up that way. And I think by the time we finished with Pia, she really did a tremendous job with elevating our game that way. You know, you saw a team who was so used to playing direct over the years to a team who played unbelievable in the final against Japan in 2011 World Cup. You know, so the U.S. team can do it. And I think this stigmatism of, you know, the U.S. is just big, strong, athletic, fast. You know, we're pretty technical savvy as well. And I think that there's more and more players coming in, players like Megan Rapinoe, Tobin Heath. They've got a tremendous amount of technical ability. And, you know, now with Tom, he's just trying to continue that and continue to get us to play good soccer. He knows that we can do it. And I think the final third and just improving those areas will be the next step. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that we can play beautiful soccer. We can mix it in with sometimes a counterattack up to Alex Morgan, who can blow past, you know, three players, score a goal, or we can keep the ball down on the ground and slip through balls and finish on a great build-up play.
Just quickly, I'm sure that relationships with Tom will develop, and I'm sure that there are, you know, players that get on with him incredibly well. But I do have to ask, how much of a blow was it to lose Pia? Because there seemed to be such a camaraderie within the squad with her, and she seemed an incredibly popular coach to work with.
She was an unbelievable coach. I think that she came in and did a very brave thing, and that was to kind of change the playing style that we all had kind of been used to and adapted over the years. For me, you know, personally, Pia, you know, saw the talent in me and saw kind of what I could bring to the team. And, you know, she stuck by me all the way. Even in before London, when she lost a little bit of faith of me, you know, I still supported her, and I knew that, you know, and told her that I would help the team win in any way that I could. So, you know, she did a lot of great things. She's a great person, so passionate about the game. But like anything in life, you know, there's people that retire, there's people that move on. And you just kind of continue the road that you're headed on. And Tom stepped in. I think he's doing a great job with our team. I really like him. I like his, you know, his coaching style, his demeanor. And we're all kind of adjusted and just kind of now in the next cycle of things. So, you know, we all have wished Pia well. I know that she's going to be gearing up for the Euros with Sweden. And, you know, it was definitely kind of weird playing against them in Portugal. Definitely a tough, hard-fought game. But like anything, you just kind of move on and continue what you're doing.
You are the only player, male or female, to score the winning goal in two Olympic finals. I mean, when people say that to you out loud, what's the sort of feeling that you get when you hear that?
It's pretty hard to believe. I know it's kind of, it's sunk in. I mean, I know that that's the case, but, I still have a long way to go and I still have a lot that I want to accomplish. So I can't really sit here and dwell on the past and everything that I've done because I'm hungrier and I want more. And, you know, I continue to improve. I continue to get fit and that's what it takes. And I know that I'm going to continue to keep working as hard as I can because, you know, like I said, I've got more in me. I've got more to prove. And, you know, I've got goals that I want to achieve, but it's pretty crazy. I think that, you know, I don't try not to just dwell on all the accomplishments because I'm still trying to fight like I'm an underdog.
Kylie, I appreciate your time. I will wrap it up with this final question, and I hope it's a nice one for you. You were recently inducted into the Rutgers University Hall of Distinguished Alumni. How proud a moment is that?
Huge. I didn't realize how big of an event it is. It was an unbelievable night. I'm truly, truly honored to be a part of such an incredible, inductee. There were four other phenomenal inductees, and the list at Rutgers is really impressive with a couple hundred people on the list. I'm one of those, and you know, I couldn't be more happier to have spent the night celebrating that.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/WFPod.
So that was Carly Lloyd. Great person, great footballer, and great to see her back doing what she does best. And it's also nice to see that she's just been recalled to the US Women's National Team roster as they take on Canada on the 2nd of June. Now, normally we would talk about the game, but actually we've just recruited an individual based out in Canada, Emily Dalhunty, who will be at the game, and she spoke to us to talk about the fixture and the two teams.
There's a rather big fixture happening this weekend between the Canadian Women's National Team and the US Women's National Team. You're going to the game. Tell us what the mood is in the two camps.
Yeah, I think everybody's really excited for this one on both sides of the border here. I think today pretty much a whole bunch of people from both teams tweeted that they're on their way to Toronto. So it's going to be different for both teams. The Canadians, I think they have something to prove to themselves and to the fans. Maybe they feel a little bit cheated still from that Olympic semifinal. So they're really going to be going out for the win. I heard Diana Matheson say in an interview that this game is really a lot for the fans as well. They haven't played in Canada for more than a year now. So I think they're going to be going for the win. In the States, they don't have as much, they don't have anything to prove. They're number one in the world, and they have been for a while, but the thing about them is they want to, you know, keep their number one in the world, and they don't want to lose. So, both sides are really going to be going for it.
Okay, great stuff. Now, the squads were announced recently. There were some interesting choices in both rosters. Tell us about the controversial name that has been announced in the Canadian squad.
Yeah, Rachel Kwan. So, yeah, she played for all of the levels of American national youth teams, and then she was announced for the Canadian camp. So there was a lot of people scrambling to kind of see what that Canadian connection was, and Canada Soccer said it's her dad was born in one of the provinces, Saskatchewan, here. So, yeah, there's some Canadian fans that are kind of against this sort of thing. It's definitely going to be a lot of talk from her in the years to come.
Well, obviously, let's not focus on too much of the controversial stuff. I guess the final question I'd ask, I think it's 12 years since the Canadians beat the US. What do they have to do to try and overcome such a powerful team?
I think they really have to be solid at the back. The Americans just have a plethora of attacking talent. Obviously, the ones that come to mind right away are Alex and Abby Wambach and Alex Morgan. they can put the ball in the back of the net as well. And then also Kristen Press, she, as you know, plays in Sweden. And in her first, I believe, 7 caps this year, she scored 6 goals. So she's a new threat, and she hasn't played against the Canadian senior team yet. So she's going to be someone that the Canadians have to shut down if they want to win.
Thanks for that, Emily. A top insight into what is sure to be an incredible game between two very strong sides. We now move on to the NWSL, and normally it would be ourselves that would look at the games that have taken place over the last few weeks. But seeing as we have Emily, seeing as she did such a great preview on the game coming up this weekend, she gives us her review of the last few weeks of the NWSL.
Hey guys, here's each NWSL team's most surprising moments so far for me, starting with the 8th place Seattle Reign. I was shocked at how well Seattle played last week against Portland. They looked way better than in their first 7 games, and the return of Hope Solo did wonders to Seattle's backline. It sucked to see the game be decided by a terrible penalty kick call by the ref. I got a little bit of secondhand embarrassment from that call. 7, Chicago. I've been surprised by the amount of injuries Chicago players have managed to get so early. It's safe to say it's a really good thing that reinforcements arrived this week in the form of their German players. 6, Washington. As a Canadian, I'm surprised at how surprised people have been with Diana Matheson's play. All of her 5 feet have bossed the midfield for years, but the Spirit are really going to need more attacking power if they want a playoff spot. Number 5, FC Kansas City. After Lauren Sesselman's red card last week, I'm surprised at how long they were able to handle Sky Blue with a player down for over an hour. There's something that draws me to want to pick this team as the ones to win it all. 4, Western New York. How quickly they've been able to turn around their slow start to the season surprised me, but it really shouldn't have. Having Abby Wambach and Carly Lloyd back healthy in the lineup has done wonders for the team. 3, Boston Breakers. The Twitter world and I were surprised with Lisa Cole's decision to sit Sydney Leroux last week, but it makes sense. She wanted to get lots of her players' minutes before the national teamers are away, and it worked out as they were able to get a big 3-0 win over Washington. Tie for first, Portland Thorns. I really don't know what to think about Portland. They've been getting mostly good results so far, but there still seems to be a missing link in the midfield. Maybe the return of Tobin Heath can fill it, but I would also really never bet against Christine Sinclair or Alex Morgan. And just saying Sky Blue is tied for first is a little surprising to me. I really don't know anyone who picked them to be this strong so early. Hopefully Kelly O'Hare can recover from her ankle injury sustained last weekend, so she's back on the pitch soon. Thanks, guys.
So that was Emily Dalhanty with her first NWSL roundup, and I'm sure that you will all agree that her Canadian tones are a lot more easy on the ear than Hamish and I's southern UK accents when rounding up American soccer. But speaking about American soccer, there are few names bigger than US legend Mia Hamm. And Alicia, you have actually spent some time with her recently, haven't you?
Yeah, I did. I was lucky enough to meet Mia back at the 2011 World Cup in Germany when we were both working for ESPN. And to say that I was starstruck the first time that I met an absolute legend of the game would be an understatement. But, you know, I'm lucky enough we've stayed in contact and remained friends. And she was over for both the Women's Champions League final and the Men's Champions League final on the Saturday. And we spent some time together, and I dragged her to one side over a late lunch to have a chat to her. So I'm with Mia Hamm, former US international, one of the legends of the game, all-time leading goal scorer. Mia, you're over in London for the Champions League final, but you saw the Women's Champions League final on Thursday. What were your thoughts?
I thought it was a great game. I thought, you know, both teams are at the end of their season, so the first half was... had a bit more energy than the second half. Some really great technical football, players going forward. You could see the players on Lyon had played alongside each other for a very long time. But credit goes to Wolfsburg. They were committed to their style. They were hard in every tackle, had some great counters, and then were fortunate to get that penalty kick to secure the victory.
Do you think with Wolfsburg's style, everyone knew they were going to sit back. Do you think Lyon in the French League, they do win by quite a few goals pretty much every game. Do you think that was actually, that went against them, against that really defensive style?
I think what ends up happening is when you have such consistent success that they have is you feel goals are just going to come. And then the further you progress in the game, it seems the tighter people get, because you're looking at the clock going, oh my gosh, you know, if we don't put one in, the last thing we want to do is go to penalties, because then it's a coin toss. But you could see that there was a little less movement up top. And I didn't know if that was because they were tired or they were just getting a little bit frustrated.
And what about your fellow American, Megan Rapinoe? Possibly controversial substitute at halftime. Do you think we're questioning whether there was an injury or whether it was a tactical change?
You know, I haven't read anything about it. I looked kind of on our sports websites, because I know Grant Wall from Sports Illustrated was here. And, you know, it's tough. Megan's she's a competitor. You know, she'll find a way to help her team win. And so I was very surprised that they took her out. So, you know, I'm praying that it's not an injury. But I know for her, if it's not, then there's a lot of frustration with it.
Yeah, there were people saying that possibly Camille Abelie wasn't particularly playing at her best. No one really stood out for me as having a fantastic game for Leon, so it did seem surprising to take Pino out.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't understand it, because when she got the ball, she had some great combinations. She was getting players in. She was moving forward. I just think, you know, in the end, they didn't play their best game. And, you know, Wolfsburg did everything probably their coach asked him to do, and we're able to get that penalty.
And the new league, the NWSL in America, you've seen one game. This is, everyone's saying, third time lucky. How's it going over there?
I sure hope so. It is. It's been going well. I heard the attendance is decent. It's not to where they want it to be, but at the same time, it gives these players an opportunity to play at a high level for majority of the year, and that's important for youth development. That's important for those players that maybe don't fall into a national team, and for those national team players to make sure they get decent training and playing environment for them.
And it does seem like they've really scaled it back and starting to progress a lot slower than possibly the last two leagues. Do you think that's definitely the way for the league to succeed?
Well, to one degree, yeah, but it'll be interesting because, you know, when you have, I mean, looking at that final, that the level of soccer was tremendous. And you have a player of Megan Rapinoe's caliber that wants, you know, I'm sure she loved it over here. So players, I know some players have talked about potentially coming over. This is a great time to do it. You have 2.5-3 years before the next major event. I know there are 3 or 4 women playing in Sweden, so it'll be interesting to see if some players want to play at the top clubs in Europe or continue to play in the US.
So seeing that final on Thursday night, how would you compare what they have here in Europe to what the US has?
I think right now, just because of the history, you know, it's probably a little bit better, but my understanding is in Europe it's just a handful of teams that have all these great players, where in the States, you know, all these great players are sprinkled through the entire league, and I think that helps with the parity. You know, right now if you look at the standings, there's not one team completely running away with it. Every match is a hard-fought match. You haven't seen 5-0, 6-0 games. It's either 1-1, 2-1, 2-0. And I think that says a lot about the quality of the NWSL and how they really thought about making sure that parity existed.
And do you think, though, over here with the Champions League, that it definitely, you'd have to think it's a positive that these teams do get to play against different styles, different countries within a domestic competition, essentially?
Absolutely. It just broadens you as a player, but you know, for those players like Lyon, which is majority of the French national team, you know, when you play a Germany, you know, when you play Wolfsburg, it's a similar style to the German national team. You just, you know, change some of the personalities. So tactically, not a lot of changes. So I think that helps. And you're exposed to those styles can only enrich your game. And, you know, a lot of these players are getting ready for European championships this summer. So that experience helps them in tournaments like that.
And what about the new coach, the former Australian via Scotland, Tommy Somani? How's he going? How's he settled into the new role?
I think you know, he's kind of hit the ground running, and he's just trying to take everything in and how the U.S. organizes their youth systems, and especially with the new league, balancing time when you have the players. But what I appreciate and what he's done, first of all, he's a fantastic guy. But he's really looking at the next wave of players. So he's investing in tomorrow's stars, and that's only going to strengthen the national team. It's going to give those young players that exposure and that confidence, and it's going to give the veteran players that opportunity to mentor these young players.
And what about you, Mia? I mean, we've spent a couple of days chatting all things football, which I absolutely love, and I did ask you the other night, Why aren't you coaching? Is that something that you want to get more into?
You know, I'd love to help, and it's one of the things. I love my time on the national team. I felt like I've learned so much. Do I think I'd make the best head coach? No. I look at some of my teammates, you know, that leadership, Julie Foudy, Carla Overbeck, and just the insight that they had. But I would love to be able to share my experiences. So I never say never. I do, you know, we do have three kids, and that's kind of my first responsibility. But we'll see. I've never, you know, I don't want to close the door on that. And I've told Tommy, any way I can help to make your team better, I'm here. Because, you know, I love playing for this country. I know what it means to put on that jersey, and how hard it is every single day. And to make that experience for you, some young player, that much more enjoyable, you know, that's why we're here.
What changes do you think Tommy will bring in? Because Pierre had such a successful period. He's not the type of person that will make wholesale changes, right. But how do you think he's going to keep the USA progressing forward?
Well, I think, you know, I've talked to him a little bit. He's talked about, you know, strengthening the technical side, maintaining that American spirit and that fight that has made them so successful. But I think the big thing is, as I said earlier, really looking at the next wave of players. And this, there's no better time but now. You know, you've seen in terms of his rosters, players getting their first caps. And, you know, you want these young players to not just get an opportunity to play internationally, but to experience the training environment, you know, how it is on the road. That responsibility of kind of earning your keep, and from everything I've heard, these young players have responded, and it makes them excited, kind of makes them reinvest in what they're doing going forward.
Is he still doing his crosswords constantly on the bus?
I'm sure that, and every time I'm with him, he's getting a cup of tea.
Yeah. So. What about his Premier League cards? Because he is actually famous for that within the Australian setup. Has he got his Premier League cards competition going?
I haven't seen those yet, but...
You'll have to ask him. Yeah. He actually had a trophy that he carries around every single tour.
Oh, really?
Is
that like Fantasy League?
It's his own Fantasy League. Oh. Yeah, he's the head of it. Look, and the next part that I want to ask, this is more about the banter. You're in England.
Yeah.
There's lots of banter going on. You've even learnt some new terms. What's the one that you're taking back to use first?
I think the one my husband and I like are is lovely jubbly.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
So that was Mia Hamm, and I'm sure you'll all agree, incredibly insightful, and I think we are incredibly privileged to have had her on the podcast. We would like to say thank you to Mia. If it wasn't enough to have Mia interviewed on the podcast, we also have an incredible prize. The first prize that we have offered on WF Pod. And what we have for you is a signed Women's Champions League final programme by Mia Hamm herself. So what we're going to do is we're going to think of a way that we can offer this up, because without Hamish here, I don't want to go ahead and do it without him. But I will talk to Hamish and obviously Alicia as well, because she was the one that's kind enough to sort this up for us.
and we will think of a way to offer this up. So keep an eye on our social media channels, and in the next few days or the next week or so, we will put out there how you can win a signed program by Mia Hamm.
Well, all I was going to add to that, Kieran, was it could possibly be if anyone out there, any of the listeners, have any ideas to throw at you as well.
Absolutely. If you've got any ideas on how we could offer this program, then please do come back to us. But I think we're going to wrap it up there, Alicia. I think we've covered quite a lot, and I think we would like to thank Moya Dodd, we would like to thank Carly Lloyd, and we would of course like to thank Mia Hamm for appearing on the podcast. But from a personal perspective, I would also like to thank you, because you have been an absolute star. And while Hamish usually leads on these podcasts, I have enjoyed taking on the presenter role, but it's been made a lot easier by having a lovely co-presenter.
Thanks very much, Kieran. I've had a great time. Appreciate being involved.
Great stuff, and I'm sure we'll have you on again. So thank you very much for downloading the podcast. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can do so through the usual channels. We're on @WFPod on Twitter. On Facebook, we are on facebook.com/WFPod. Or if you wish to email us, you can get us on thewfpod@gmail.com. So for now, for this month, we wish you well and we say goodbye.
Goodbye.
The Women's Football Podcast. Shining a light on the women's game.